this week's show, The Sweet Spot for AI and Construction Tech, with Colin Whitlatch from Kahua. All right, Nathan Wood, it feels like yesterday. Maybe it wasn't.
Yeah.
It just depends yesterday. On, well, for the listener world, it was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But for us, it's just 2 days. You know, behind the curtains, you got to record
them. Don't tell them how it
when
works.
You can. Well, that's why we don't say we're live anymore. That's why it's not annoying on Fridays and we miss it. So, you know, for the sake of consistency, we record them when we're home. We're also not in, thankfully, lockdown or anything anymore where we have to be at home. So a lot of us are on the road.
Yes.
So it was a day ago. And Colin, it was not a day ago for you. It's great to have you with us, man.
Happy to be here.
Where are you joining in from today?
So today I'm at home and I enjoy that when I'm here. I'm up just south of Annapolis, just across the actual river up here. I live along the Chesapeake Bay. Been home here for almost a decade. Just realized that and time has flown by. And so up here, by the way, for Kahua itself, our headquarters down in Alpharetta, Georgia, moved up here just because our office, we made it very much for our employees to work anywhere really in the world, but give flexibility because, you know, it's software development can be done anywhere these days. But for me, our journey, wife and I absolutely love just all things on the water. So up here for boating, enjoy that, raise our kids up here and enjoy the life that we have up here in Maryland.
That's awesome, man. And you guys are getting that nice round of weather right now. I just left there a little north of you and I'm like, oh. We love that weather. So, but it's going to change again, right? Like everything else.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah. Don't like it. Wait, it'll be there tomorrow. Hey guys, you know, we're back on YouTube. You know, you're following us, but are you following where we're going to be on the road? Check us out. Follow our LinkedIn, see where we're going to be. And who knows, you could have a conversation with us in person and maybe even get on the show.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@theconTechCrew.com to learn more.
All right, we are back. So let's dig in. Colin, you moved up to Maryland for the water, but you've been with Kahua for quite a long time from the beginning of the journey almost, and if not the beginning. So give us a little history on you and how you got here.
Yes. So we'll start with Kahua, talk a little bit about past life. But for Kahua, yeah, and almost, it's actually over 15 years, incorporated with a group of founders, and I joined shortly thereafter. Back in the day, I will say this, talk to everybody about Kahua. Our vision's been the same. You know, literally we hear things like, hey, we want the industry to innovate. And that's what we set out to do. We started with PowerPoints, believe it or not, early technology started out with Flash as kind of like the, hey, this is what we're going to do, kind of just get some ideas going and morphed all the way into where we are today. In my role, I'm the CTO of Kahua. And in that role, I just oversee really the development on the R&D side and just building out the product that you see today. And we will definitely get into a lot into the nuances of that here on the show. But in that past life, did a couple consulting type gigs and also worked for a very large mobile device management corporation, a very large one out there. And so a lot of corollaries there into the what you do, but my background's been very enterprise focused in developing those systems over the years.
Yeah. And Kahua's had a long journey. It's funny because people, I don't think because of the market you're in, especially my listeners, right? Like I found out about Kahua, it is 10 years ago now, maybe a little bit less than that. And realized there was this whole other world. I think I found the other world as I found you guys. So talk about a little bit about that journey, because you're, you know, I don't want to call you a project management solution system. I don't like those things, but you started off at least in very much owner focused, very owner driven, because it's a different set of challenges. And so it's been a different market. So talk about that evolution, what you guys have learned along the way.
Yeah, well, so that's because the background here before Kahua, the group of founders, their background was in construction project management and a variety of companies leading up to that. And the central idea was literally, hey, you know what? We built this solution, but it's industry agnostic. You know, you could go in there and build solutions for any number of industries. Really, what you're needing to do is searching for applications themselves. You get workflows, you get business logic, you get some configuration. That's all these systems in the enterprise world. Doesn't matter what industry, but it was very much focused on the construction side. And then the idea was like, if we can build this system, we can build this platform that can support all those things, workflows, business logic, configuration. That must start in construction because we know that really well. Subject matter expert is key. You cannot circumvent that no matter what. And so let's start there. Let's build it. And then let's start seeing as we build it, let's look into the other industries that are out there. And what I will say, this is, people don't believe this, really never, only until they start working in our own system, you know, actually as a Kahoo employee, we don't have any construction specific code. It's not like you go in there and there's a static RFI application. It's literally all metadata driven. And literally it just tells our platform, all right, here are the rules. Here's what an application is and how it behaves. And so we do that across the construction space and what we did originally. So punch list and then another application, submittals. And then we started in layering on cost. And so things with contracts, change orders, pay requests. And then it grew from there. And we became, you know, we built our, you know, best in class out of the box type solution there. And then started venturing out into the other industries, things like education, oil and gas, real estate. And then just continued to evolve the same concept. We've got a bunch of metadata that describes how these systems or these solutions should work, these implementations on Kahoo. And then we've grown considerably and then also got into the government space. And that was quite a journey. And when, you know, it just grew from there. And so now we're just a mix of got a ton of industries that we are in. A lot of construction focus still is very much a big part of us. And yes, we started owners and architects, but then started venturing out into spreading support for subs and the like and general contractors. And then, but also in the other areas like the government, you know, they're contractors, but they've got a lot of their own nuances to their own solutions. But again, it's all very flexible, and that's what we maintain. We build this platform to support these capabilities. Then we take these metadata driven capabilities, layer it on, and then that's what brings everything to life.
Yeah, so many questions here. Because I mean, this idea of really truly being a project integration platform to connect all these different dots, I mean, 15 years ago to have that vision, I mean, was low code even a term back then? Because I know that's something you guys, you know, reference now, but yeah, what was it back then? To like, how was that evolution over 15 years?
There was some murmurs of low code back then. There, those platforms went off. So that was the thing. That wasn't what we set out to do. Ours was literally like, we need our own language, and it was meant to be something that was more of a business language, and that's what we evolved. And so it's literally our own flavor of it. Lends itself well to where we're going to get to here with AI. Before we get there, it was literally just taking us like, what do we need to do to be able to express things like business logic? And how do you express workflows? And so we just took a look at what was out there. And, you know, I mentioned Flash. That was just to get quick animations. You know, I am partial back way back when. That was a fantastic platform. But then we realized, just talk about Drury here. Well, we started looking, Silverlight is what came out. If you guys remember that.
Oh, yeah.
It's been 15 years, actually, since last released almost. That was where it's like, wow, you got this business application, just power in the browser. And so we aligned what we did from a technology perspective to say, all right, we'll just do our language and build it up. But nobody was doing this. Everybody else was like, hey, your solution is always some code that you deploy, you push it out. And then if you want some business rule changes, you got to get in there and you got to actually write more code. And then for us, it's like, well, no, we got to share runtimes able to do that. So let's build upon that. But yeah, to answer your question, it was, we knew the idea, we knew the vision, and then we evolved with technology. We evolved with the industry. And we proved up very early on the power of this because it's like, you know what? Well, we love that RFI app you've got. But as you well know, everybody runs everything differently. There is no one implementation is alike. And so rather than sit there and write some code, it's like, no, let's add some capabilities, just be able to say, hey, in configuration, you know what? Your workflow goes this way instead of that way. Or we got some approvals we need to add. And so we built upon that. And a lot of it was literally as we go type development. Vision was there, and then just filling the vision as we went.
But I think the second term that you said there, business logic, I love, especially for construction, because I feel like if you think about a project, the business logic is essentially the contract that the owner writes and that everybody has to kind of follow. And so, yeah, if you're an owner, you're probably going to try and use the same, more or less the same contract, the same business logic from project to project. And so is there that connection, or what is that process for an owner that's coming on to Kahoo for the first time to kind of translate, like, here's how we do business to now, how hard is that for some customers to do?
Oh, across the board. And then to answer that, at least where we are today, I'm going to go back to where one of the very first things I worked on, which was the introduction to what we called auto numbers. And now my background is not in construction. I do mobile device management and work with these Fortune 500 companies. And so I've got just kind of generic knowledge, not construction. Well, it turns out auto numbers to me initially is like, you know what? You just have numbers. Well, let's just add one to and show, you know, four digits, add a one each time. And then that to me is like, all right, maybe some people want to be able to seed that a little higher. Turns out auto numbers in the construction world, they can be anything. They're not just they can reference projects, they can reference documents, they can reference their children. I don't think there's actually a limit to them. The amount of things I've seen over time has, it blows my mind. It's for very, very valid purposes. People number things in their, the way that fits for them. So the introduction to that, literally, it's going to vary because some people do want the whole, hey, just an identity column. Let's get that thing going. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Others need the elaborate. I've got everything under the sun factored into my number. It's about 200 characters long. It's got people named in it. Very real scenario. And so that is where, because of that variability, some companies, they see this like, hey, you know what? Let's go in there and show your configuration. Here's how you do it. And they're ready to go. Like, yeah, turn it on. You're out of the box. It's pretty darn close. Let's go. Here's the people to fill out for the roles. Others go, you know what? This is how we do auto numbers. But let's talk about the workflow. You know, we have a 25-step approval workflow, which some people here listening may say, wow, that's too much. I will tell you this. It actually makes perfect sense for the groups that go through that. I prefer the simpler rules where possible, but there's very valid business cases. And so what happens today is we need to make sure that our platform can, out of the box, have several kind of tenets on what needs to happen. You should always have a working solution with Kahua, always. You start with it, and then you evolve it. And that applies for the customers when we go into these implementations and say, hey, you know what? Here's the things. Here's Kahua running. You can go day one. You know, if you come to us today, I listen to the show, and you're very excited, and I just want to get going, you can actually get a working domain in our parlance. But that's not going to fit your business. You're going to need to work from there. So you start layering things on top of that. It's like, let's take a look at your suite of applications. You know, we've got things that say, hey, we do things like capital planning, for example. And then it's you can read documentation, but you know, there's nothing better than discovery, walking through what the features are currently. And then you get into something that's double-edged sword for us. Everything you see, because it's metadata-driven, well, you likely can change it. But that doesn't mean that you should. That means you need to take a look at what should be applied and what's different and what you need to get through. And so people love it because they're like, hey, you know what? Let's start. Looks great. Out of the box, wonderful. Hey, can we change this? Oh, you can do that? Let's change that. And so it's tempering that and then say, hey, you can have that running system. Let's get to implementations. And let's iterate and evolve together. I love to see people get live quickly, because then they really find out what matters. But it's across the board. We just like to make sure our solution needs to be intuitive. And when we do that, and people see what's there, it just leads to natural progression of, all right, let's adapt it to our workflows for our company.
Yeah, which, I mean, it kind of lends us to why we wanted to bring you on today, because you guys came through that early mess of just because you can doesn't mean you should. You've been that way from the beginning. And in fact, like, I always called it like the iPhone platform for project management, for construction management, whatever you wanted to call it, because you could, you know, you can make your own things and you could connect those things and make them do what you want. Like, you could see at times deer in headlights, and then you could see at times people like way too overly aggressive. Like you said, we're going to, a 20-step process when you're dealing with the, you know, the safety of your water, the safety of your energy, your grid. I like a 20-step process to make sure everybody's dotting I's and crossing T's. When we just want to decide on flooring in a commercial building, now I'm with you. Can we have 3? Maybe 2? You know, 1 with cost in there? Okay, great. Like, so you've had that just because you can doesn't mean you should. And sometimes you should and you just can't because you don't know how. So now we have this whole new thing that's hitting us, and I want to balance it too. We'll loop it through, but this little thing AI that's out there, and you've been really focused on it because I think it's resurfacing a lot of old problems, a lot of consistent ones, but you know, it's got an accelerant on it. So talk a little bit about, you know, where you are and what you're seeing in the industry. And I don't know if it's Kahua that's doing it or if you're talking about, you know, what you're seeing in the industry, but just give me your take.
Yeah, the sum up AI, it's wow. Just really what it's done so far and where it's going. And I will say for us, it is very much a balance. You nail it with the whole, just because you can. That is the first thing that should enter your mind when you're working with this, is to take a look. It's that human element of balancing what AI is capable of doing and where it's going to go, and making sure it's going where you need it to go and it's doing what it should. And that is a very real thing across the board. It's a real thing with our product and what we provide anyone, our customers, but also when we use it ourselves, because we're using AI to build all of our capabilities now. And so it's striking that balance is just critical. And I will say there's patterns emerging, which is great, because what's funny is, you know, generative AI has only been out like in 2022 and towards the end of the year. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. And here we are, that it's just taken over in so many ways and just ingrained in a lot of life. You know, like maybe a lot of customers perhaps are doing the generative thing now, get some great things back. Well, there's also that whole agentic style of really, you know, of the products that are out there, such as our own. but also the agentic flow of building things or doing research. And so the general landscape right now is those patterns are starting to merge and we are starting to utilize those. And it's really no different from other technologies in the past because like, it's like, yeah, this is very cool, very new branch of science in many ways, but it gets to rely on the 30, 40, 50 years of data science that's there to realize, hey, there are good patterns. Because one that instantly jumped into mind here is like, you really should just create something and push it to production. And we still see a lot of that that's out there, but you are skipping many things that must be done if you want to have a solution that's going to work. Security is where you start, but there's a many things on top of that. There's the performance of things. There's also just really protecting data and all the governance, and we definitely can get into here. But really what it boils down to is there's a lot of exciting things, but you have to have good controls and processes ahead of time before you start. And you need to follow them and adapt as you move forward. And then the patterns start to arise on what should be applied when and where. And then that kind of gets, you know, AI use is really, there's an art to it. It's knowing when you've gone far.
Well, and this is what you get because now you're poking at my own experiences lately that I got nerdy on LinkedIn about this recently. And if you write your code with AI and you write your test straps and your QA and QC process with it, it's just going to work and it doesn't actually work. And I have realized now that Nathan is, even though I use a lot of the consistent software and I'm not like the most creative software user as a human, like I like to fix it, not necessarily, you know, I don't break make it. Excel do all sorts of crazy things, but literally the way I use a phone, these app developers haven't figured it out. And I have locked like four of my favorite applications. I lock them on a regular basis because the AI, I believe in their test strapping or, you know, in their test harnesses, they're not realizing that I'm going to go outside of that flow that somebody else is using. And I'm going to be in the middle of loading something, flip over, look at something else and come back. And it always kills the close button. So I can't get back to the beginning of the application. I'm like, well, but like you, these are perfectly great apps. And yes, I'm sounding like that old
yes,
man.
It's right? An
like,
example of friction. Yes, I get it.
It's driving me crazy because I'm like, pick one, get 10x on writing the code and then give me another few more human people like me to flip around through it, make sure, oh, we forgot that.
And that's the human element. Cause I will say, I mean, absolutely love AI and it's so powerful, yet it will, you have to course correct frequently. We do that all the time. You know, I always call it the one shot prompt. Those are amazing where you literally get something, you just nail it perfectly and it does everything you ever wanted and dreamed of or even better. And there's nothing left. Those are a mirage usually. That's you think you got it, but you didn't. And you're hitting exactly what we hit in our own things. Like, hey, you know what? Here's the simple instructions. And you read that, you look at it, like, that seems, there is no way that could have anything other than perfection. Turns out that, as you said, you go to use it and, you know, you shelve your app for a little bit there and you come back and all of a sudden it's deleted all your data. And it turns out that AI told you that was what it thought was a good idea. Oh, the user wasn't around, so we want to clean up.
Sometimes it's that, but sometimes it's the user giving a bad prompt and then getting mad at AI when it's like, well, dude, you're not giving it a good prompt. Like the question is the key aspect, right? And like missing that aspect too, right? there's both sides.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Because here's another thing that I see. And then this is, and it's just everywhere. It's like AI doesn't refuse what you ask outside of things on the kind of safety.
Copyright or whatever, yeah.
Past that, oh, it's going to go do something. And sometimes it's exciting to see that. It's just, you know, let's just set it loose and see what happens. Just to stress, we don't do that with a product and the building of it. It's just fun to see. Just full disclaimer for you. But you could literally say, hey, this did it work. Please fix. You know, and that's a little ambiguous. You got to guide it because it is going to happily turn around and go, you know what? Feels like deleting your data is the right answer here. Let's just go ahead and do that. And I will stress, good segue here because I talk about these things a lot. And there's a few things that are critical in this space. First one is the human element in terms of operation. That's what we do for a product. I recommend this for anyone out there and how they develop. Hey, you having automatic AI and 100% AI-driven decisions, you know, there might be a version of the future where it's a level where that can be done with frequency. There are very few applications of that when it comes to matters of business because of exactly what we're talking about. It can go off and do what it feels like or do the incorrect thing. And so we operate on the human in the loop concept. And so when you have things like our assistants in Kahoa, it's like, hey, I'd like to create data from or perhaps of a spreadsheet. It's going to process that and it's going to bring it up in front of you. And it's going to show you what it thinks was in that spreadsheet or what should be done next. But you as a user need to confirm that. because if you turn around and you just automatically do it, you don't know what repercussions are going to come on down the line. And they're going to have legal ramifications as well as just data integrity. It's a very important thing.
Fantastic segue into FedRAMP and CMMC, right? So I'm, again, not directly familiar, maybe secondhand knowledge of certainly like Nuforma users that have to have like multiple instances of Nuforma, one for CMMC federal projects and one that's not, so that they can do all this fun stuff and start to share data and other things. So I guess, obviously, you guys are very, very well known for being well-placed in that FedRAMP space. Maybe because probably a lot of folks maybe are less familiar, like kind of the 30-second on what is FedRAMP, the position you guys have, and then maybe how it impacts AI and all this stuff we've been talking about.
Absolutely. So FedRAMP, so it's a Federal Risk Assessment and Management Program. And that is the government's program to, you know, they realized early on that there needs to be consistency in the government in terms of how technology is brought in and how it evolves. And so they started that program to do that, to have something that's centralized and say, hey, you know what? You know, when we're, no matter which agency you're working with in the federal government, they have consistency in the rules and controls and processes that are applied. And so that's what that is. It's a program that runs. And so when you're part of FedRAMP, you have those various classifications, low, medium, high. And those designations correspond to a set of controls that you must meet. And those controls themselves can cover the technology and things such as algorithm strength and encryption, as well as how your employees, what type of data access they have, where your protocols for interacting, not just your company, but also with agencies. And so I believe there's different versions because everything's evolving. Every year, there's always improvements to the program. But I believe Fair and Moderate, somewhere around 327 to 350 controls, somewhere that range. And so what that is, what it really means, there's a large set of documentation about these controls and how you should meet them. And so we're a cloud service provider, CSP, that's what adheres to these programs, that you go through those controls and you got to make sure you meet them, got to build the system out first, but then you go through auditing with a third-party certified, really, when you're auditing firms, there's many of them, 3PALs is what they're called. 3PALs come along and then they go through, they look at all your controls, make sure you adhere to them and any findings. They work with you to say, hey, you know what, you know, this was the controls, how you meet it. You do meet it. Here's the evidence for that. Or, hey, you know what? We could ever find this. And then eventually federal government has has a whole program for the certification of that. And they come along. They do very much the same thing. And they make sure that the program, everything you've done meets and satisfies or exceeds the controls. And then you become FedRAMP authorized, which we did, I think it's back 2022 is when we actually received our authorization. And very important thing on top of that is it's nonstop. Two things. One is the controls, technology evolves. AI is a big one, as we're talking about here. But other things happen as well. I mean, our federal government is very defensive in a good way for what is out there. And you guys see these things, you hear it in the news, you hear about hacks and breaches, and they're very much on top of that. And it's not just a matter of, hey, what system had that? And then they do a deep dive and they do their data calls internally to say, hey, you know what? You know, I know you don't use these devices, but how about we check and take a look at the systems that are involved there? And so there's a lot of back and forth. We love that because that trickles down across the board. Because for us, we have, you know, we're developers at heart. So we're lazy. We only want one version of our software. We've been talking about our Kahoot government network. It's special purpose for the government community at large, which can be the federal government, it can be state government, also the public sector, things like universities. They're all applicable for being in that government network. But we also have the commercial side. And so same code base, same solutions, same implementations. So everything that you have in the government trickles on down to our own commercial network. And the same thing happens with FedRAMP itself. It's like everything trickles down from what they lead with. It's like best-in-class security protocols and then make sure that everybody's adhering to that.
I think that's a wild, good explanation of how FedRAMP is supposed to work and does work, because AI's evolving the attack surface too, right? Like the attacks are getting more intricate, more stealth. And so when they attack one, you know, there's a breach and then they figure it out. This FedRAMP program doesn't just socialize it. They kind of harden it. That's why you said between 327 and 350 and next year it'll be 360, maybe 38, who knows, you know, like, because these aren't some willy nilly, like, oh, we're just going to make you check another box. It's like, no, we've experienced this. We're going to bring this back. And if we can bring those Fed standards down throughout, it's a hard process. And it is difficult to get. It's stringent. And there's not a lot in our industry that to truly have it because of that. And it's also, so everybody listening knows, Kahoot can do everything they want. If you're company breaks the rules, you break the rules. So this is also a matter of the service provider has to be FedRAMP, and then the company itself needs to have adherence standards to FedRAMP in the way they deploy it. Like, you'll have whole departments that that's what you're focused on doing. We can make it, but you can break it, you know?
You 1,000%. I mean, they have it. That's the concept. There's customer responsibilities. You have them. I would love to say we take care of 100%, but you're absolutely right, because we have role-based access security. So you could grant admin to everyone in your company. Customer responsibility not to do that, but it's on your group to be able to provision those things. So 1,000%, it takes all of us to make things secure. We limit the number of controls. That's why with CMMC, you brought that up. A lot of them mirror what's in FedRAMP, all the same types of controls. So, you know, we can provide a lot of it. You still have your customer responsibilities that you got to take care of.
Yeah, and I think that's something interesting for folks too, because FedRAMP is a high standard and something people are searching for, but not everybody is doing FedRAMP work. But there is a large group that is doing this CMMC work, and we're really seeing in construction, like, this thing was waved around for a long time, but I feel like the last year and a half, the rubber has hit the road. So give the brief, like, what's the difference in what people in CMMC should really be thinking about?
Well, for CMMC, as you say, it has hit the road. You know, I think there's kind of effectively a grace period here. It's like, you know, there's so many, it's the ecosystem's enormous. All right. And changing everything overnight to say, hey, these are best practices and standards and we need them everywhere. It is not feasible to put that in one day, not feasible in a year, feasible in several years. And that's where what we're seeing now. It's like, you know what? We've seen how these things need to work. And now we're laying out those foundations. And if you're involved in the federal space and you're looking at just your own systems, they are going to, these requirements are coming. And it's speeding up and getting faster and faster, because one of our number one risks really on the federal side is just insecure systems. And so if you're working in the federal space, it is something where these things are going to tighten up even further and say, hey, this is how this should work. Just like I talked about, you need to have role-based access security. You need to have those controls in place. That's something where you need to have a solution for everything that you do that touches these federal contracts. But it's going to keep picking up steam. It's because, again, I will say this, we see it, you know, I talk about the government passes things along that occur, these breaches. Well, we see the attacks on our own infrastructure because we host our own network. It is increasing every single day. And so that's going to keep going up. Our defenses have to keep going up. So if you're in this space, it is something where you're in the program is done intentionally to say, hey, you know, these are all the areas where these things matter and the data that you have and how it needs to be secured. And so they provided a framework for you to start doing your own. Let's first explore our platform, because you may have systems you didn't even know about that are supporting things, at least some organizations. Do the assessment and figure out what type of data is there, then how do you secure it, and then you move along. And so the, you know, bottom line is, it's an evolving thing. It's a 2.0 now. those numbers will keep increasing. And you'll see just a, you know, best in practice type security, but also the process itself is just kind of evolving so that everything is secure by default. It's one of the tenets of the program.
I love this. Cause yeah, I mean, it's almost ironic that things like FedRAMP that, you know, we think of in as a 4-letter word and curse it now, but it's, we always say we need standards. We need the, you know, this compliance. It's like, well, that's what you've been asking for. It's just, there's pains with getting to that. I guess, have you seen the positives on the other side of, you know, when folks are in compliance and the people are seeing more efficiency, seeing more innovation from it?
Yeah, I see. So a couple things. Here's a funny thing. So if we have competitors in our space, I prefer them to get FedRAMP authorized, because when they get hacked, it comes back to us. We have to deal with it too. And it gets to the point where it's like, all right, well, those data calls I was referring to, we get them. And it's like, guys, don't do that, because you are limiting the ability for any of us to interoperate. Secure your system. Because when we all do that, life just, it's better for everyone across the board. Because one, you know, there can be effective work stoppages when things get leaked, and we may not even be a part of it. But if you have some large organization that does have significant breach, well, we're going to be doing our work to protect against anything you might have done that trickles down to us because go the other way. So that's what I see is, like, it does, yeah, as these programs get there and as organizations start implementing or becoming, you know, if you're FedRAMP authorized or you've seen CMMC compliant, well, you become part of the ecosystem. And we can, you know, we may work directly with you, or we may have an indirect relationship. I love it. I'd love to see more FedRAMP systems out there. It would increase the capabilities for what we could do on an integration perspective. perspective.
And the reality is it's expensive, and a lot of folks, yeah, like they haven't invested like Goa has. And so I guess a hypothetical, to let's say there is a federal project that, you know, owner has established Kahua as that integration hub, and now you've hired a GC that, you know, say they're a project site customer, you got a design team that's on Uform or whatever, and these guys have their APIs. Is there a way to maintain FedRAMP compliance through a Kahua while still having integrations, or like they have to be at FedRAMP compliance to, or have you had that situation?
So for us to integrate with another solution, they need to be FedRAMP authorized in order for us to interact with them directly. That's a requirement. You can, because we have a couple of things, you can be a user, or you could be just a system out there. You can make a request. We support OAuth, and I will say you as a company can get your customer responsibilities. You can interact with our system. You can push things in, you can pull it out. But there's an important thing where you're talking about there is, because of CMMC, it puts that requirement on you that you need to still protect your data. Back to that, oh, you're a customer, you have responsibilities. Well, you're here to be FedRAMP compliant. This is what you need to be doing. As well as if you're CMMC compliant, you've protected it elsewhere. So you can work with other systems as long as there's compliance there. You can work with that externally on the CMMC side. But for us, as a FedRAMP authorized solution, the only systems we're going to be working with are going to be other FedRAMP.
Yeah, solutions. Yeah, yeah. It's a weakest link thing. That makes sense.
All right. So we've talked a little bit about the ethics, the security, FedRAMP, CMMC, and then this AI thing. And so I want to loop it back because you said something that I think is really important for people who are trying to think about how do you take technology. I mean, we keep talking about AI, but it's technology in general to move the business forward, to get more done. So that is, you know, it's the hard part of securing it. It's the hard part of understanding where the human in the loop is. I really like that, by the way, because I've heard this over and over. Anytime anybody talks about taking a human out of the loop, that's the moment in which your ethics should kick in to ask the question. We didn't talk about it, but like, I don't know that I would say the AIs are configured to please you, but they have been trained that you want positivity back. And it is what it is. And so they're not going to tell you that, yeah, that's really cool, I can do it, but it's a bad idea. Like, they don't do that. They don't, unless you have set your models up. You know, yes, it can be. There's somebody out there yelling at me right now that, Jeff, your stuff's not configured correctly. And I'm just saying, on a general basis, watch anybody use it. And then understanding, you know, we've covered this on this show and others, the context graph. How a decision actually gets made, right? There's a conversation in Slack or Teams or Outlook or on the phone or, dare I say, in person. And, you know, you're making a decision that the AI is never going to have, at least not for a really long time, all the access to that context and that humanity to make those decisions. So I think those things are important to understand how difficult it is. So given all those difficulties, like, how are companies going to use this stuff to do anything other than, like we said, we were like hitting the stick with CMMC. And then, Nathan, I like that. You're like, no. So it's like the contracts, right? We had to beat the contracts up for years until we got them to a point where, like, we can all win. Okay. So now we're at this, okay, we've got security, we've got AI, we've got new tools. What can we do? Like, what can be done?
So you're getting into the difficult part of AI. All right, everybody see, if you don't have security and you don't have rules and you just give it the data set,
jump at it.
Yeah, go at it. Just short. Talk about unethical. All right, so let's dig into this a little bit. So I'll tell you a little bit about how we do it. And you're nailing a couple things in there. One is the context. You know, context is key. Context is king in this regard. You know, AI needs context in order to be effective. But there, you're hitting many things here. What context can it have? What context should it have? Where we start having to solve these things at a very low level. First and foremost for us, again, is that AI can't see anything or do anything that a user, that the human cannot do. So therefore, for us, if you see stuff that our AI is working with, you might say, hey, let's go ahead and, you know, I talked about creating some data, or perhaps, hey, let's look at this in this document, this 2000 page spec. I'm looking for, you know, what type of drywall I'm allowed to install on this project. And so for that, the first thing here is, you know, you may run that in chat, by the way. You may have no, you could in non-construction space and run that. First thing it's going to do, though, it's going to be looking at what context it has. And our system is only going to be giving it information that you have, you know, say in your menu, for example, all the apps you have. And falling out that the kind of use case there, well, it happens to be the projects and files. And like, there happens to be a spec that's there. And so that's something that we provide as the context. We don't let AI go find it. We provide it. And then at that point, it's like, all right, now I've got a document. And if you are not able to, you know, you don't even know about that document unless it's available to you. You can actually go to the app, go see a document comes up. At that point, then we're able to provide the context to AI to say, hey, well, you know, here you can ask questions. That particular scenario, by the way, is where you get into one of my favorite things, which is, you know, how does AI do the search thing that it does? It's like, how do you work with it? Massive engineering challenge, and that's where RAG comes into play, or retrieval augmented generation. And so that's where our system, right alongside everything else does, we actually run, there's something called embedding, which says, hey, take this text and let's get some numerical values back. This shows a similarity to different other text. And so that's what we generate. It lives with the record. So what's great about that is, you got the original document, you got this cool vector thing going on. That's what AI can now see. Now you can ask those cool questions about, hey, what tribal is valid for? And so, you know, kind of to bring this all together, we're providing what the user already has access to only at the context window time. And AI can work with it to stream back that lovely, it's always markdown usually coming back, but it's got that rich information back. And I'm glossing over a lot of points in there with the security.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the intelligence, right? Because let's continue that a little bit, because let's say I'm in the bidding phase and I'm looking through a spec and I want to know what level of drywall finish. And it goes, I didn't find any level of drywall finish. Would you like me to ask an RFI for you? Like, how cool would that be? And I mean, again, it's also scary too, because maybe it was embedded somewhere and it didn't find it. You know, was it hallucinating? There's all kinds of questions on that. And
well,
I'm just spinning.
I think that's what's key though, is what Colin's describing in the RAG and the way you're doing it, you're actually preventing that hallucination. If it doesn't find it, that's not necessarily a hallucination. It may not be there.
You know, that it's, yeah, it's a good thing.
It's a real good thing to point out real fast. And I do like that idea of, hey, you know, would you like to generate an RFI from this?
Part is the architects engineers on the other side of it going, well, yeah, but it was over in this other spec section. Yeah. That's what I meant by it's not actually hallucinating. It would be not catching it. And so it is actually there. It just wasn't in the place it thought it was going to be. And it wrote an RFI too quickly. Would have done that too. So maybe this is less of an AI issue and more of just a communication issue.
you're hitting on a key thing here. So AI is non-deterministic. It means you're not going to get the same result just running the same thing twice. You know, we've refined things. You got the guardrails, and there's a lot of prompting and system prompts involved to get it close. You might have very much. It may create an RFI for you. It might also just say, hey, you know what? I'll draft an email and send it off. It says, this is what I think should be in this document. Just in the hopes that we'll come back and have an answer. I mean, it can do wild things.
Yeah, it can do wild things, but it's also able to then, you know, like go find it in other places. And it might come back and say, listen, Nathan, to your point, like we've worked with this architect before and they have a tendency to put the drywall spec over here. It's not necessarily standard practice, but would you like us to look there? And you're like, yeah, go look there. And it's like, hey, we got this. Okay. Like, again, that's speed to the answer. Again, it's not. But that's what's key to what you guys are doing, Colin, is that in a natural world outside of a Kahua or somebody else building this, the AI is just going to go answer. It has a tendency, it is not definitely going to do it, but has a tendency to be like, I looked through it and I didn't find it, but on this type of project, I kind of know that let me go see what the world does. And hey, the world says it's this, and it'll bring it back really. And if you don't have settings to say like, where did you get that from, et cetera, you could be going down a really bad rabbit hole. So that's where I want people to understand why like frameworks, like what you're building around it are so key to preventing hallucinations and preventing more work. Because Nathan, if that comes back and then I submit it over, then the architect's like,
then they're pissy. It's a relationship.
You're making
broken,
stuff up. Again, like
AI slop. It's a version of AI slop, right?
Well, I hate to bring it up, but there is a person who was disbarred for doing that. It created an entire brief based on things that did not exist and presented it in a court of law. So, and by the way, everything we do in construction is open to litigation at some point.
This is the last example that's worth talking about, because a lot of projects do this, is the meetings that get recorded that are on Zoom or whatever, and then you AI transcribe those meeting minutes and let AI summarize those meeting minutes, and then they become official meeting minutes. And if you haven't actually reviewed them and said, is the action items and everything that was said in this actually correct? you could be putting some really bad stuff in your very official legal meeting minutes. And so I guess that's something come up, or if you had ways of controlling that, or from the owner side. Yeah.
Back to the human in the loop piece, you need to, and we say that our own, you know, as a state, you see it everywhere, but check the results.
Yeah.
All right. Always. And you need to, in this case, meeting minutes, we love it. There's an automatic summary of data all over the place, but it can't be automatic, especially meeting minutes. You're nailing one of the more common ones. So you work on our own meeting minutes and action item summaries. But it's presented. You need to review them. It seems annoying, but you need to. You have to, because you can't. As great as AI is, it doesn't. You're right about not refusing, and you're also right about something. All of them are very helpful, but the majority of people love to see that whole, hey, that's a great idea. But what may be looking like a great idea, or what AI came up with, may not be, or maybe incomplete, or it could be missing things. And so our approach to that one is, you got human in the loop, but the other is it needs to link to real artifacts. And I don't like seeing, we wouldn't see anywhere when we're talking about, if you're looking into doing we talk about a single document search, but there might be a broad document search, having links to those documents, putting the actual excerpts, but then saying, you know, here's the content that's here, give you that ability to go do the research that you need, be as helpful as possible. I mean, we're looking for value, and we want to reduce the number of clicks to find something. We want to reduce the cognitive load in order for you to do tasks down to what matters. I don't want to eliminate it. We definitely do not want that. But just to give you the facts that matter. But it's the things that aren't there that can be problematic. It's something completely missed, or there's been issues.
You nailed it, because right, we talk about how a lot of these things have been around forever. Reducing clicks is powerful. It has been from the beginning. So if AI can reduce more clicks and bring us to the information. And that was something. I was on stage recently at AGC, and this came up with a professor who's like, listen, you can fight AI in your classrooms. And this is construction management professor, and said, listen, or you can adjust. And yeah, things that these students are bringing to you have been run through AI, and AI has helped them generate it. So then ask them questions about it. Have them talk to you about it. You will know in the first probably minute and a half to 2 minutes, because 45 seconds, kids are a little, you know, everybody has a little stage fright once in a while talking, but you will know if they know what they're talking about, or if they just let the AI do it. This is the same thing. Like, get me to that spec and give me that portion of that document. And by the way, reference the other three places that it's referenced, give them to me in context fast so I can then read them. But you hit it, Colin. You read the meeting minutes. You have to spend that time. We can't jump over that part. That's the critical component. And in my personal opinion, I've said this on this show and other places, like, that's the difference between an enhanced intelligence through AI and an increase in, dare I say, stupidity, but it's a bad word for it, because it's not, it's complacency, or I don't know, it's going to make us dumber in the long run, because we think it's going to be right. And we're devaluing the knowledge of a construction project or of anything that it's bringing back to us.
And I will say this, you're afraid about, hey, AI is going to take my job. You know, you hear that out there, the doom and gloom. And I will say, what has happened is you're that factor that AI is never going to fill. You're that high, you're just moved up a bit. And so, yeah, sure, it made it. Talk about click count documents that are there. You still have to make the decisions, the appropriate decisions, because AI only works back. We talk about context. You know, one thing, there's a limit to the context you can feed it. You know, like these days, Opus 4.7, maybe a million tokens, perhaps. You fill that up, AI has got nothing left. There might be, you know, 2 billion more tokens of actual knowledge that needs to be transferred in there to even make a decision. But there's that higher level, and that's where we're all moving to. It's just like, all right, you can do these wonderful things and get us information, but real decisions and assessing whether something's right. And what I always tell internally and externally to people with Kahoa is that you're going to be presented with things, and everything's unique these days. You know, just like I talk about non-determinism. There's something comes up, you got to assess what you have, and you got to make an educated decision. You have to do that. AI cannot. You can ask it to, and it's like, hey, what do you think? And sometimes it gets it really, really well. It might bring other things, but our role is to do the actual, take a look at these things and make that real decision on what needs to happen next.
Yeah, because I think the spec example is essentially AI search is your use case, right? Whereas the meeting minutes is more or less generative. You know, it's formulating things from what it learned, and it's, you got to trust it a lot. I would not trust it as much, exactly.
Yeah, another example quick on that is, you know, people talk about, you know, kind of get into how we've approached things. Another example is we actually limit the types of AI we used. There's things like custom models. we actually don't do that because on the FedRAMP side of things, that is not an approved case for things having these custom models right now at a global sense. And so what we do is what's known as the frontier models, things like your OpenAI and your Anthropic type things. Very interesting thing is this. We have all these security controls. We've got this platform. Everything's secure by default. You've got to start with security, by the way. You can't layer in security after. That's a global thing. You don't build out that lovely vibe-coded platform you were talking about earlier and say, hey, let's make it secure. Other way around. Interesting results happen when you do that. But what we do is I talked about the vector side of things and just using embedding. We only use a single chat completion API to achieve everything that we need to on the AI front. And so we don't have custom models. We don't train models. We don't have persistent memory. A lot of those things we do that to solve this issue of we can't have cross-pollination of customer data. You cannot. So everything is just a single request and response, atomic. It's never going to have anybody else's data in it. You got to fill that context window up, do what you need to do, and you are done. And that's how we approach things. No shared context of any kind. What's interesting here is that actually increases. We talk about people innovating on our platform. Internally, we innovate on this because we have to find solutions that using this simple going to APIs that we can use, how do we achieve things such as I want to do a budget comparison? And the answer is not make a custom model for us. I mean, you could do that, but you've got a whole world that you got to work with on the security front. But what we can do is actually have context of the budgets themselves and provide some tooling. Important thing for us, no automatic tool calls. That's something where you just wire up to AI and say, hey, you know, here's a bunch of tools you can call. Have at. That is not what we do. It goes back to these controls for whether it's FedRAMP or commercial network. AI can tell us if it'd like to call a tool. And that's where we kick in and say, you know, are they okay? Here's what they want. Is this user able to make this call? And if the answer is yes, great, we can do it. We go get the context. We can do another turn. Or it may be, like we're talking about, yeah, they don't have access to that. Because AI will say, back to you'll do anything, it's like, hey, I'd like the keys of the castle. I'd just like to know everything about some other project you don't have access to. AI is going to come back. If you gave it a tool to go get that, oh, it does, it brings it back. But for us, it'll tell us, hey, we want a call and we want information about this project. And that's where our normal security system kicks in and says, yeah, that's a good project. You know, we don't even get any information back, secure by default. But in reality, it's the same thing as if a user went into a URL and says, I changed the ID, for example. Yeah, put in that query string and change something. Same exact thing. So that's how we approach things. Again, we have to be secure. You got to protect this data. And so I hit those, you know, we're at a little pretty low level at the moment, but that's how things function. But bottom line, though, is you can still get what you need to done. It just requires innovative ways to address the problem. It's like, hey, last thing on this is you can have these tool calls. It may say, hey, let's show the user a comparison, line-by-line comparison between the two budgets. It's like, guess what? You have access to that? We can absolutely do that. Our host can show that to you and say, hey, here's the side-by-side of these things. And now you've got this immersive taking a look at everything between two budgets. And then we can do trending. We can do analytics. I mean, it's something that AI is fantastic on. It's like, hey, you know, based on this, what do you see? And it can reply.
Yeah. See, and you gave it the constraints and then allowed it to still work. So there's tons to be done there. I think we could go on with this for hours, but I think we've actually hit the time. We're probably a little over. Sorry to my team for, you know, what you're going to have to edit out here on us. But it's been so much fun, Colin, to have you sit down and talk to us and sort of open up our eyes to what it looks like to try and use this new stuff at scale.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure to be on. I love to talk about this and we're all learning together. It's exciting to see just the technological advancements as we go along. I love it. You know, models get better and capabilities grow and grow, but then you've got to back this up. We serve a business purpose. And again, it starts with security. Well, hammer that home. A lot of what we talked about, it's all on the secure side. But then once you address that, once you got a foundation, whether it's ours or another one, based on these programs that are out there, the sky is the limit on what you're capable of doing. And so I'm excited because it just gets better and better as we go along.
That's awesome. Nathan Wood, I knew you'd enjoy this one.
Oh, man, I love it. Yeah. Capability, constraints, governance, security, all my favorite buzzwords.
All your favorite buzzwords. Listen, everybody, it's real easy to find Colin. I suggest his LinkedIn will be in the show notes, but check out Kahua as well. Learn more about what they're up to. It's one of those groups you want to stay involved with. Colin, I look forward to seeing you out there in the world soon and catching up again.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
And thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Colin Whitlatch. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.